Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will discuss rethinking the science of nutrition with Dr. T. Colin Campbell, Ph.D. Dr. Campbell, Professor Emeritus of Nutritional Biochemistry at Cornell University, has revolutionized the way we think about our food with the evidence that a whole food, plant-based diet is the healthiest way to eat for health and longevity. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, based on new research, the question is being asked, can beets beat blood pressure? Hypertension affects more than 65 million American adults, half of whom are unaware of their risk. Here, what you don't know can harm you, leading to heart disease and stroke. Fortunately, research suggests ways in which Mother Nature's bounty might help, most recently highlighting the potential benefits of beets, whose compounds relax blood vessels and thus alleviate pressure. In the study published in Hypertension, British researchers monitored the effects of drinking one cup of beet juice or water among a group of middle-aged hypertensive subjects. Those drinking the ruby red elixir enjoyed between 8% to 11% drop in blood pressure compared to the control group. What's at work is beets' high concentration of nitrates, which when converted into nitric oxide actually expands veins and arteries, allowing more blood and oxygen to flow to the brain, heart, and other organs. This may help explain why beet juice improved endurance among cyclists, boosting aerobic efficiency by nearly 20%. Beyond nitrates, beets contain betalains, phytochemicals which may help keep LDL or the bad cholesterol down. Now, if beet juice isn't exactly your beverage of choice, try eating beets in your salads as another alternative. Well, health is the new wealth. Fitness predicts happiness better than finances. Can you buy happiness? A new study sheds light on this age-old question, and the answer might surprise you. Researchers from Pennsylvania State and Harvard University looked at several factors, including physical health, income, education, and marital status, to determine what was the biggest predictor of happiness. Out of a survey of over 16,000 men and women, those who rated themselves happiest also happened to be most likely to enjoy excellent physical health. Wealth came in close second, but here the factor was not so much absolute wealth as relative financial status. In other words, having money did not help generate happy feelings, but having more or less than one's peers was an even more precise predictor of how folks felt. If keeping up with the Joneses is what it takes to keep smiling, researchers warn this could lead to a vicious cycle, where individuals consume more and more just to maintain a constant level of happiness. So what's the bottom line? Start your pursuit of happiness by taking steps to improve your diet, manage your weight, and increase physical fitness. And try not to let what others have affect how you feel. We'll be right back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, do some fruits and vegetables contain more potent cancer fighters than others? Well, some of them do seem to stand out, although this probably reflects the fact that these foods have been studied more extensively than others. For colon cancers, it's cruciferous vegetables. A high fruit and carrot intake appears to decrease the risk of lung cancers significantly. Research subjects eating one or more onions a day were found to have only half the stomach cancer risk of those who never ate onions. And soy studies suggest that soy foods decrease cancer risk at many sites, including breast, colon, rectum, lung, and stomach. Now, despite such findings, most scientists feel that the lower cancer risk is really associated with eating a wide variety of fruits and vegetables rather than isolating certain ones.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our featured guest today on Health and Longevity is Dr. T. Colin Campbell, Ph.D., Professor Emeritus in Nutritional Biochemistry at Cornell University. For more than 50 years, Dr. T. Colin Campbell has been at the forefront of nutrition research. His legacy, the China Project, is the most comprehensive study of health and nutrition ever conducted. Dr. Campbell is the Jacob Gould Sherman Professor Emeritus of Nutritional Biochemistry at Cornell University. He has more than 70 grant years of peer-reviewed research funding and authored more than 300 research papers and co-authored the best-selling book, The China Study, Startling Implications for Diet, Weight Loss, and Long-Term Health. And he is the new co-author of his latest book, which we'll be talking about today, Whole, Rethinking the Science of Nutrition. Dr. Campbell's principal scientific interest began in his graduate training in the late 1950s, has been the effects of nutritional status on the causation of cancer and long-term health. And Dr. Campbell has also established the T. Colin Campbell Foundation, his educational nonprofit, offering acclaimed online courses in plant-based nutrition. Well, Dr. Campbell, thank you very much for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
It's a real pleasure, Dr. Westerdahl. Yes, thank you.
Well, you know, I think for those that may not be familiar, or for this the first time they've heard you talk about your work, and particularly with your study on the China study, could you quickly review the China study and what you found in that study?
Yeah, the China study, the name of the book that came out in 2005, actually, and co-written incidentally with my son, Tom Campbell, who is now a physician himself.
Yes.
In any case, that book reviewed in a sort of chronological order my long career in research, experimental research, I should say, mostly at Cornell University. I had a large laboratory, lots of students, postdocs, and other colleagues working with me all those years, and I owe them a great deal of gratitude. But in any case, I started out with a fairly simple observation that turned out to be pretty spectacular, and that was we could turn on and turn off cancer in experimental animals simply by adjusting the level of protein intake. It was really, really pretty remarkable, this effect. And it was unmistakably true. And so we spent time on that project for a total of 27 years, actually. It was funded by NIH, working out, you know, whether that was really true and how does it work. And it was so provocative. And along the way, we learned a lot of things about the relationship between nutrition and cancer, not only being able to control cancer development by nutritional means, but many other kinds of basic mechanisms by which food works in the body in terms of its effect on cancer and as well as other diseases. And then eventually we got around to doing this study in China. Human population, obviously, a big, broad national scope project in China. In that case, we were simply interested to see whether or not what we had learned in the laboratory and elsewhere, whether that applied to a human population, and it did. So the combination of those two sort of lines of research and about 20 years in the policy world as well it led me to the idea, I guess you could say, that nutrition is far, far more important than I ever thought it was. I mean, I started out in the beginning of my career, in a sense, pushing protein consumption, the more the better. And in fact, animal protein was even better than that because it was efficiently utilized and had higher biological value. But it, along the way, all those years, we learned that that was the wrong assumption and that there was a limit to the amount of protein we should really be consuming. And more importantly, there's it suggested the kind of food we should consume. And so my bottom line was at the end of that career that ended up in the China study was a whole food, plant-based diet without adding back, you know, basically salt, sugar, and fat. The three devils, that's what some of us say in nutrition, that a whole food, plant-based diet really does remarkable things. And by remarkable things, I mean we can actually use that diet now to control and actually even reverse heart disease, first shown by a certain Dr. Morrison quite a number of years ago to some extent, then Dr. Ornish, and Dr. Esselstyn is the one who's really done a remarkable job with that and has his own book out. So it can reverse heart disease, it can reverse diabetes, keep it under control. Work of Dr. John McDougall and Dr. Neil Bernard and others. And when all that started to appear, I sat down with my son and wrote the book and summarized, you know, all what we had learned and also described to some extent why, not why, but, you know, how this impacted, let's say, industries in our country and the difficulties that are presented, let's say, to various people in the community at large. But, you know, having described that in the China study, here's what happens, essentially, and what happens, this is pretty remarkable. And I also, of course, became aware why it is that the public haven't heard this story before. It's a whole food, plant-based diet, really low in fat. The natural fats is present in plant-based foods, and fairly low by our current standards in protein. Also, the natural level is present in plant-based. In any case, we described that in the China study and came out with it in 2005. And since then, I have heard just remarkable stories of how people, when they switch over to that kind of diet, especially when they got symptoms of diabetes, heart disease, overweight, things like that, the recovery time is very, very fast. And so then I wanted to write a second book, and that was try to explore this question, essentially, why is it that these whole foods in that particular form provide such remarkable nutrition? And I wanted to explain it, you know, at the biological level, essentially. I know over the years we've not heard much about this, and it's mainly due to the fact that the wrong kind of food is being promoted by industry. We buy these foods because we want them, essentially. But I wanted to go back into the basics and just explore this question. What's so special about this idea of whole plant-based foods? That's what the book is about, whole. It's a very different kind of paradigm than what we're accustomed to assuming.
Yes, you know, it is. And most of your career, you thought of the old paradigm and through all this research come to the new conclusions. I have to tell you, by the way, with the China study, I have lent that book to many people, and several of them, it changed their lives. And I've given this book to some health professionals as well who were so compelled by the science to show that your whole food plant-based diet is really optimal and really the ideal way to go, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And incidentally, I might tell you, too, thanks very much. You're a physician yourself, and you've given it to some of your colleagues. And I've probably given around close to 500 lectures since the China study came out in 2005.
Yes.
And most of them now are actually to medical schools, which really pleases me because the medical schools, of course, don't teach the subject of nutrition. Really, almost all of them teach almost little or nothing in that area. And what I'm finding, in fact, is that the folks who are in the practice of medicine, they haven't heard this before. And at first, they were a little bit stunned, I guess, with some of this information. But now I'm finding that there's a very rapidly growing enthusiasm on the part of a number of people in the practice, you know, to actually use this approach to actually treat their patients.
The irony of this, too, Dr. Campbell, is that, you know, Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, really, you know, at the beginning, 400 BC or so, said, let food be your medicine and medicine be your food. And what you're doing is getting back physicians on track with that philosophy.
Exactly. Exactly, exactly. I've used that quote, too, of Hippocrates, and I guess he knew it well 2.5 millennia ago.
Yes.
So here we are rediscovering this concept. It's just really, it's the real deal. It's a good thing.
Well, your title of the book, Whole, Rethinking the Science of Nutrition. This is what we need to do. We've thought of the old paradigms. And let's talk about a little bit in your book. You talk about reductionism and what's going on in the science field. Explain that.
Yeah, well, when we, in the public, when we think about nutrition, we tend to think about that topic in the context of individual nutrients. In other words, we want to know, you know, how much of the different vitamins are present in the food we purchase, for example. So we focus on the effects of these individual nutrients, both in terms of food labeling, also in terms of food fortification, where, you know, wide practice has been used for a long time. And more particularly, in the last, what is it, about 25, 30 years now,
yes,
we focus so much on individual nutrients, we actually have created the nutrient supplement industry as a means of nutrition. I've never thought that was really nutrition. I call that more pharmacology than nutrition. It's the focus of individual nutrients. And now we've had enough time to look back at some of the studies that have been done on the use of nutrient supplements, and they really don't work. Not in the long term. They certainly don't work. On the short term, we might see some effects that look to be beneficial, but in the long term, there's no evidence that nutrient supplements do anything. In fact, that some of these supplements actually can cause more harm than good in the near-term future. And also, it's a diversion by people thinking that very reductionist single nutrient idea. That takes their attention away from the idea that whole foods is worse at.
I think the whole area of supplements, that people need to realize the word supplement means a supplement to a diet. It doesn't replace the diet. And, you know, the first thing to do is eat the way you're talking about in this book.
Right, exactly. I mean, the whole food thing is the real deal, and nutrient supplements is not. So those are examples of what are called reductionist science. And
yes,
and further, you know, that's the way we actually studied the subject. I was guilty of it myself, and have been a very active researcher for many, many years. Both involved in getting funding to do the research as well as sitting on panels and boards determining who else should be getting funding for NIH, if you like. And everything is really focused on one nutrient at a time, or one mechanism, as we say, you know, as to how they work. And, of course, also on we tend to focus on one disease effect that might be produced or controlled by, you know, single chemicals like that. And it's really a crazy way to do things.
Yes. Let's focus real quick. Simply explain what the whole food plant-based diet is. What's all included in that diet that we're focusing on?
Well, it's basically fruits and vegetables and legumes and, you know, cereals, whole grain cereals, of course. You know, the whole food tubers. I mean, it's the classic groupings of all the plant-based foods. And I like to think of that kind of diet as, you know, there being a lot of latitude in that. People can choose the greens they want, you know, spinach or kale or collard mm-hmm. greens or whatever. There's not that much difference between these different foods. And so we don't need to concern ourselves so much with these small differences that may, in fact, exist between individual foods in that class, because together, all these foods together really do optimize nutrition. And they're strikingly different from, let's say, the other two groups of foods that I tend to talk about. One is the animal-based foods. We don't need to consume animal-based foods. They can cause problems. They surely do. Or we don't need to use another category of foods that's been popular in the last half century or so, and that's the processed foods. So processed foods are manufactured foods, of course, as we know. They're generally put together, and sometimes mostly put together with plant material, like maybe sugar and maybe the good oil, if you will, and some fiber and this and that, refined flour. I mean, the processed foods are not good. That's not a whole plant-based food, even though they may be plant-based. It's not whole. So I think the categories of processed foods and animal foods is what we really should be avoiding. But rather than talking about the negative and all the problems that they occur, I really like to talk about the positive. The positive being whole plant-based foods.
Right.
That's where I wish we could, you know, end up on that narrative and not focus so much on, you know, all the negative aspects of consuming the wrong food, although we need to know that. We need to know that. But much more exciting to talk about these remarkable effects, you know, that can be produced by using whole plant-based foods.
And the evidence is there, as you describe in your book, on how a plant-based diet can not only prevent, treat, but also reverse many of the common diseases we have in our country today. And that leads into our next discussion here about the healthcare system and how you say that the current healthcare system that is actually harming millions of people. Why is that?
Well, if we go back to, let's say, first off, I should say that most people know that we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world. We have the highest per capita cost of any country in the world, being twice as high as even number two. So we're way, way out of line on that. Yet at the same time, when we look at our society in terms of the health outcome, if you will, we rank somewhere around 35th to 40th, depending on how we what we count. So here we are paying the most money for health care and getting very little in return compared to other countries. Something's wrong. And so what we need to do, and that's a bad deal because we know in this country that the health care costs are becoming now so high, the escalation in prices is higher than anything else we do over the last 20 years. And it's about to break the bank. It's causing serious problems, both in the private sector as well as in the public sector. And so the question is, how do we get that cost down? Well, the recent debate, I guess you could call it a debate or shouting match or whatever it was, the last 3 or 4 years in the U.S. Congress. I mean, there was all kinds of proposals being put up by the different political groups. And I followed that fairly closely. And, what they were talking about was only, who's going to pay the bill?
That's right.
That's all they ever mentioned. They were not talking about how to reduce demand. In other words, making people well.
Right.
And so the whole debate just left out the most important thing of all. And that was, let's get back to some basics and tell the public what we now know in science and let them decide. And actually, I've been involved with my sons in that effort for some years now, refashioning, a new system by which we can actually introduce the system into the public and the physician community can participate. In fact, I would argue the physician committee is really a group that need to take the lead in the future. And so I think we need to revise our system in some fashion by which these physicians take charge, administer the health they really want to administer, and do it in a way in which they can be compensated, as they should be. And I think we can come up with a new system now to change the cost of health care. And we have some lead data now, some results, to show that we can cut in half, nearly, cost of health care just within a matter of 6 months. I mean, I think if we do it really well, and I'm referring to some specific data that was done, not yet published, but it was done, it was a very sort of casual way of doing it in some ways. If we do it right, really organizing it, I maintain we can save 70 to 80% of our health care costs. I really have a lot of confidence in that.
And this is treating with diet and lifestyle-related ways.
Right, absolutely. And so we're so concerned about the cost of health care in this country. Everybody's concerned about it. But I find almost no one talking about how do you actually improve the health of the population at large? And say that it's certainly not talking about nutrition. So that's a problem. And if you look more closely at what generates this high cost of health care, it comes out of a reductionist science mentality, where we are focused on, creating a new drug or a new supplement, to control, let's say, a specific disease outcome. And, sometimes we can see results with using that approach, with using drugs maybe, and we can see what look like to be beneficial effects in the short term, but they don't last.
Right.
And they don't solve the fundamental problem.
Right.
How we got there in the first place. So it's not the system to use.
Well, Dr. Campbell, we're running out of time already, but I want to suggest to everyone that this is an outstanding book, Whole, Rethinking the Science of Nutrition. We just scratched the surface in our discussion on this book, but it's a full wealth of information on the topic and actually is a very important concept here about how we can change our medical system, improve the health of millions of Americans if we apply these principles. And you're doing something also we might talk about just for a second in trying to educate people more about a plant-based nutrition, and you do that through online courses working with Cornell University.
That's correct. We have a foundation, a nonprofit foundation, that's been administering a course program that we do jointly with the arm of Cornell University that does the online courses. And I might add, we've had great success with that. We offer 30 Category 1 continuing medical education credits for the professionals, doctors, of course, included. Cornell has over 200 such courses they now offer. They're all Cornell faculty-based, but in any case, they're offering 200 courses, and it turns out that since it's become one of the top 10 online courses in the country, of those 200 courses, we rank number one out of the 200. So our program has been just extraordinarily successful.
Well, congratulations.
And we're excited about that because I think, what we need to do now is to, especially, to get involved in medical schools,
you know,
where the students are not getting the training in nutrition. And I'm confident I can sort of, if I had 4 or 5 weeks of their time, I could give them just about all the nutrition they really need. They'll never forget it.
I'm sure they won't. And congratulations on your work. And this is a real asset to helping improve our medical system. And we got to get doctors more educated in the role that diet and nutrition plays in health, wellness, and longevity. Dr. Campbell, give us your website for more information to learn more about you and your work.
Yeah, it's my name, tcolincampbell.org. I was never too fond of having it in my name, but I was persuaded I should do it that way. We might be changing that. But in any case, at the present time, it's tcolincampbell.org. And once going to that website, you can look on there for the online courses on that homepage.
So look for the book, Whole, Rethinking the Science of Nutrition. We'll make it also available on our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Westerdahl. I really appreciate this.
Thank you. If you would like to view a free one-hour lecture on the China Study presented by Dr. Campbell, visit our video resource page of our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. On that website, you can also order Dr. Campbell's latest book, Whole, Rethinking the Science of Nutrition. That's at healthandlongevityradio.com. You'll see a list of the top health books that I personally recommend that you include as part of your health library.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.